Blog Talk Radio.
Chuck Peterson from Hartford, Connecticut. My good friend Chuck, are you out there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Well, bonjour. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Doing well. Yeah, we apologize. We had some technical difficulties with uploading your track. Chuck is a session performer in Hartford, Connecticut. And he will be joining our lineup this summer, hopefully on a couple of our shows. Chuck, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about what's like being a session performer in Connecticut, and what's the music scene like out there?
What it's like? It's interesting. You know, I do surprisingly get a lot of work because there's not a huge music scene in Connecticut. There's a lot of underground music scene, though. You know, a lot of music fans, a lot of killer musicians that are here. You know,
mm-hmm.
I wind up doing sessions with those guys, and I'm just having a blast. But I'm always looking to, I'm always looking to branch out. So and play for other cats across the country, across the world, and all that stuff. So. It's definitely an interesting scene. It is around, but you got to really, really look for it, you know. So it's been a lot of fun. I love being in the studio and I love playing. So
wonderful, wonderful. Let's dive into why the drums. The drums, as you're aware, are the heartbeat of a band's driving rhythm. What drove you to becoming a percussionist, and why do you feel that the percussion and the bass is so important in the structure of a song?
Well, it started with my father, Keith LeBlanc. He was playing drums for Sugar Hill at the time. And
wow!
So I just remember. Yeah, yeah. So
that's awesome. Wow.
Yeah, that's some interesting stuff there, you know. So I kind of picked it up from him, you know. I saw his drums laying out. I don't know if he had a session or a gig with them, but we were at the Holiday, and I just remember seeing all the drums everywhere, and I was like, that's it. That's, you know, that's what got me going, and I started playing at a very young age. And so it just grew, you know. I never thought of it as a career at the time, nor did people say, oh, you know, you can make a career out of it. I never had that. I just kind of discovered that on my own, you know. And
right.
And learned, you know, all the little tricks of the trade. You know, my father, you know, giving me a lot of tips and helping me a lot as far as what to do and what not to do when approaching a gig and when doing sessions and all that stuff. So I, you know, listening to all different types of music. You know, I grew up in the house listening to everything from rock to funk to jazz to R&B to hip-hop to reggae to Latin to country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you name it. And learned how to play all that stuff. You know, still learning how to play all that stuff, too.
Right,
you know,
right, exactly.
It's always a growing process. But
right,
to,
right,
to answer,
right.
To answer the second part of your question, the bass and the drums are very important because that is, those are the foundation, you know, and having that kick line up with the bass drum. And if you got a solid bass player and a solid drummer, you know, who are locking it together and keeping that pocket, man, the rest of the band cannot fall apart, and they will make that band sound like $1 million, you know.
Exactly, exactly. Well, you know, with that being said, and, you know, I guess this can be debated whether or not if percussions are actually the second oldest instrument, you know, in the world, followed by the human voice, according to my research. Are there any particular percussion instruments that grab your fancy, that help you bring out the characteristics and the texture of a song? Like, for example, like the song you just heard is from an orchestra piece that that I composed called "The Horns Will Fly North."
Right.
And there's the timpani. You can hear the timpani in the background, and I think there's a cymbal. Explain to our listeners, because I have a lot of students who are attending, who are in music colleges across the globe.
Right on.
Some of them are percussionists, and they're very interested in trying to get into session work. Explain your take on the various instruments, like the timpani, the snare, and what their roles are in session work and why they're so important in the structure of a song.
To me, they're important in the structure of a song because, one, you know, learning a different percussion than actual drum set, it'll open up your head to a whole different possibility and a way of playing music. And like one of the things I learned, I grew up with a Puerto Rican family, and their father was always playing congas around the house, listening to, you know, Latin jazz, listening to Tito Puente and all that stuff.
So
it kind of opened my head up to the Latin music and taking it to the drum set, you know, and learning a different way to play the drum set instead of playing that rhythm with my sticks. You know, because he taught me how to play congas. I was playing the snare drum with the snare off with my hands doing the conga part, you know? Excuse me. And so that, again, that kind of opened my head up a little bit. And it'll teach you to learn what to play and what not to play in music. You know, you have to know
right
what the right thing is to play for that particular situation. Sometimes
is that something that's intuitive? Do you think that's a skill that's intuitive, or is that something that needs to be learned over time? Or elaborate on that.
I think it's a little bit of both. You know.
Okay.
You know, you have to learn it. I believe you have to learn it and understand what it's all about and why it's that way. And then once you understand it, then you can use your intuition to put it in specific situations. Like one of the drummers that I met, who sadly passed away a couple years ago, was Ricky Lawson. And really nice cat, you know, very grateful for his career. But I read in many, many interviews, somebody asked him what his favorite fill was. And he cut the track, Whitney Houston's "I Will Always Love You."
Okay.
And he said his favorite fill was when everything was low, and then he comes in with that one big drum hit before it goes into the big chorus at the end.
Right.
He said that was his favorite. That was his favorite fill because it wasn't too much and it wasn't too little. It was just the right thing to play, and it was just one hit, you know. And even my father, he says sometimes his favorite Bill is absolutely playing nothing. You know,
right,
letting
exactly.
letting that space happen and letting it breathe, and then come back
right.
in on the one. You know, so
right.
it's very, very important to learn. To learn how to use that intuition and what to play, what not to play, see what sounds right, and listen to the people around you who are better musicians than you, you know, who are going to tell you the truth and who are going to tell you, okay, let's not do that. Let's figure out something else to put there because that doesn't work. You know, so you do have to do a lot of thinking about it as far as what you think is going to work and if the producer is going to like it, if the artist is going to like it, if the rest of the musicians are going to like it. So that's kind of my theory on it.
Interesting. So let's talk about that because that's a very interesting concept and, you know, depending on the training of the musicians and the producer, you know, the synergy that you speak of. Why is that important to have the synergy with the producer and the other musicians? Even if you do have a different point of view musically on how you approach a, let's say, a certain tempo or a certain a dramatic feel to a measure, what's your take on synergy?
My take on it is, I think it's absolutely a great idea to try to get into the producer's psyche, you know, and to understand where he's coming from because he's the one that has a vision in his head, and it's the musician's job to bring out that vision, even if you think it doesn't work, you know. And a lot of times, a lot of people are like, oh, that doesn't work. I don't want to do that, you know, that kind of thing. Me. Sometimes I feel like that, and it's probably because I'm very self-conscious, you know, about a lot of things. But I also look at it as a nice challenge. Okay, this, you know, let me try what he's thinking because this will open my head up to something completely different that I've never done before.
Okay.
And I think that's an important thing because you, as a musician, you always want to grow. You know,
right.
if you think you've made it to the top and you've learned everything that you can learn about music, then you should quit music and do something completely different, you know,
exactly.
because there's always room to learn. So,
right.
So I think that's why, you know, it's important because it's the producer's calling because he believes in what you can do. You know,
exactly.
And that producer believes that you can pull that out of his head, you know, and so you don't want to walk around and be like, oh, no, I don't want to do that, you know, because I'm Mr. High and Mighty and all that shit. So it's like, let's not do that and just cut down to the chase and just be like, okay, let me give it a try. And a lot
right,
of times,
right.
even if you don't think it works. If you do what the producer says, the producer's going to hear it and be like, yeah, you're right, that doesn't work. You know, a lot of times that happens too. So
Right.
And then they'll
exactly.
and then they'll want to try your idea. You know, there always has to be that compromise.
Right. Let me ask you this. So, you know, do you prefer being a session player or performing live? And if so, why?
Oh, man, that's a good question. They're both totally different animals, you know. But I lean more towards doing the session work because I just love the studio vibe. You know, I love having to be in the creative process of coming up with a song and then being able to lay down those tracks because whatever you play on those tracks when you cut them is forever set in stone, and a lot of people are going to hear it, and it'll be etched in stone and forever in time. And if people love it, they're going to want to hear more of it. And then if you have a bunch of musicians who are like true musicians and want to learn something, and you play something that they absolutely love, you know, they're going to want to emulate that, you know, and they're going to want to say, oh yeah, let me play it like this, you know. But again, they're two totally different animals, and playing live is great too because because of the experience. You have people who are experiencing what you're doing, and
exactly,
you know, and then they'll always remember that, you know.
Right.
Oh, it's a great show. They won't remember the exact things that happened at that show, but they'll remember it's a great show. Whereas opposed to being in the studio, they'll hear this stuff like, oh yeah, I remember this song, I remember that drum part, I remember that guitar part, I remember that keyboard part, you know, whatever instruments you have on there, and then they'll try to sit there and learn them, you know. So I think they're both equally important, but I tend to lean more towards
the session,
the session stuff.
Very interesting. You had the opportunity to work with a fellow musician, Wolf Crichton, and tell us about that. I thought that caught me by surprise. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I did. I played the snare drum track for the song Iraq. Hey, that rhymed. Awesome. I'm a poet and I didn't even know it. There we go. Old joke.
There you go.
But I don't remember exactly how that came about, but I do remember him asking me if I can play the snare drum part on Iraq and do like a marching snare thing.
Oh, and so you know Wolf?
Yeah. I met him through Facebook.
Excellent.
Yeah. That's how I got to know you, was because of Wolf. So
yeah, Wolf. Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
Yeah, man. So the music world is, you know, it always brings itself around. People tend to know each other, and it's amazing. But yeah, he asked me to cut the snare drum track, you know, do like a marching snare drum thing. So I took So I took my snare drum over to my buddy's house, John Sandoval, who's excellent guitar player, excellent arranger. You should definitely check his stuff out, Sandoval Band. And I cut the snare drum part at his house in his studio. So, and then I sent the track off to Wolf, and there it is, you know.
And
so
I'm pretty sure he was pleased with the final product.
Oh yeah, he told me he was pleased. I don't know what the results of it became of it. You know, a lot of times that happens. You know, I was happy to do it for him, you know, and I know he was happy with it, so, and if, as long as he's happy with it, then, hey, I did my job.
Yeah, it's a great song. It's a great song, and I love what you did there. It's a great song.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So let's change gears a little bit. Tell us about life in Hartford, Connecticut. What's cooking out there in Hartford?
Hartford. What is cooking in Hartford? Well, I've been out of the gig scene since October, because I've just been concentrating more on studio work. So I've been doing a lot of studio work. I had an album come out by Mike Greca called Convergence. It's a great album. You should check that out. And then got some other recordings in the works. Did a live album with my boy Emmanuel Rivera. Working on. He's a trumpeter. And we did a live gig, a live album, and the stuff was absolutely slamming. So I can't wait till.
How was that? How'd you like working with a trumpeter?
I love working with different artists, man. It's, you know, I get bored playing one style of music. You know, I still try to make it fun, but it's worth me. It's again because I've listened to so many types of music as a kid. You know, like all my friends back in the 80s. You know, when we were in grade school, you know, they were listening to like the shit pop that was on the radio, like Tiffany or Debbie Gibson and all that stuff. And they'd be like,
right,
listen to this. And, you know, and then I'd be showing them Weather Report, you know, and it just went over their heads, you know, but I understood it being a second grader, you know, because that's what I grew up listening to, you know. And so I always found that kind of interesting. But, yeah, I've been out of the gig scene for a while, so I don't really know what's happening in Hartford, you know, as far as the gigging stuff. You know, I know I've been to a lot of shows, and I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, I don't have to play, I don't have to set up, you know, all that stuff. And now it's getting to the point where it's like, oh man, I miss playing out, you know, all this stuff. So I've got a couple of gigs coming up, but there's a lot of excellent musicians.
Right, right. Well, let me ask you this. So how does okay, with the gigs, the gig environment, we'll put that aside. Let's just talk about the city of Hartford and how do you think it inspires you, as a musician? Is there something there specifically that maybe helps drive the process with your music creativity and your music productivity?
Oh, I get inspired by watching other musicians, you know, especially drummers who are better than me. I'll be like, oh man, I suck, you know. But then I'll be like, okay, this is a good feeling because that means I want to learn more, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll try to like grill them with questions like, oh, how'd you do this? You know, what was your thought process on? How do you approach this? And then I'll take it home and I'll try to learn, you know, try to learn what they gave me to work on. You know,
mm-hmm.
and so yeah, Hartford definitely has that vibe of when you see a band out playing,
mm-hmm.
you know, it definitely wants to make you play, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, okay, this is some good stuff, you know. A lot of great places to play at, like Sully's
mm-hmm.
in Hartford, great place to play, great place for live bands.
Wonderful.
A lot of time, yeah. In Connecticut, you know, some of the places it's unfortunate, you know, that they're trying to kill the music scene, but I don't think it's going to die because there are just way too many musicians here who are wanting to play, you know. And
right,
so
that's
a good thing. So hopefully there'll be a shift of, okay, everybody going out to see a band instead of going to see a DJ, you know.
Gotcha.
All that kind of stuff. So it's,
even
so
though, you know,
that'll turn around.
Right. So it is extra interesting, you know, EDM, that whole phenomenon. We went to an EDM show in Norway last year.
Yeah.
Chuck, it was actually totally awesome. I couldn't even believe that we were sitting there jumping up and down at an EDM show that
right.
basically did feature, DJs. But let me ask you this. So, you said a couple of things throughout our dialogue. You said true musicianship, something I kind of latched onto. In our complex digital world that is affecting all of the musicians, including our most accomplished musicians who are now, you know, combining, you know, the acoustic arrangements in with electronic. How do you feel about that? How do you, you know, when you've gone to school and you've gone to conservatory, you know, some of my fellow cohorts, they kind of have a certain way they feel about that. You got any special feelings about that?
Yes, I do. And a lot of people will probably hate me for this, but the whole digital thing and replacing, you know, the human musician is, I think it's a bunch of bull, to be honest with
mm-hmm.
you. You know, that's like, somebody told me once, they said, well, Chuck, you should, you know, if you want to get in the music business, you should learn how to program drums. And if I told a friend of mine that, he said it best. He goes, that's like asking, you know, a 5-star Michelin chef or Chef Ramsay to come to your house and pop a microwave dinner in the microwave and serve it to you. You know, that's exactly it, man. That's how it is. You just can't replace, human feel. You can't replace human emotion. You can't replace.
Right.
You can't replace the groove. You can't replace the time. You can't replace the pocket. You can't replace that passion that's supposed to be there in music. You know, and that's and a lot of times that is what's missing, because they're replacing
right.
it with machines and all this stuff. Now, as far as combining the machines with, like, if I have to play along with a drum machine, which I've done. I've had
mm-hmm.
fun doing that because it's like I can either play under it or over it, you know,
right,
depending
right.
on what that producer wants. But if you're just going to completely weed out the musician, and replace it with a machine, I think that's a bad idea. You know,
yeah,
because I think it's a departure from having your audience relate to what's going on musically.
Exactly.
And so those needs for musicians are always going to be there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of producers I know, they don't want to spend the money to pay for drummers, but as a drummer, we can go in there and get the track done a lot faster than some producer who's going to create the drum beat. It'll take them a couple of days to create the drum beat that they wanted when
mm-hmm.
I can go in there, or somebody else can go in there and nail it out in an hour.
Right, right. And of course, with that being said, you know, Sandy Frenchy and Jean-Luc and myself, your wonderful contribution to Tattoo, which is going to be released very soon. We really appreciate that, Chuck. We were jumping up and down when we first heard it. We could not believe the synergy, you know, with us being in two different locations and you just honed in and just jumped on in there. We just could not believe it. And we have worked with so many different drummers before, and you knocked it out of the park, and we just really appreciate that. And so we definitely look forward to, you know, working with you more.
Same here, man.
Thank you. So,
thank you. That song was definitely a challenge because I was like, okay, let me go and hear the original song and see what the drummer's doing. And I'm like, there's no drums. I'm like, shit. You know, so I had to come up with stuff like off the top of my head, you know, and be like, okay, all right, I got the idea, and I worked on it. I definitely worked on it. I was like, let me do this. Okay, that doesn't work. Let me do this. I actually did two takes, and then the engineer, Greg, and I, we listened to them both, and we decided that, you know, I think it was the first take that I did was the best one. And so that was the one we shipped off to you.
Well, we definitely appreciate that and give a shout-out to Greg. And with that being said, we're down to our two-minute warning. So do you want to give any shout-outs before we conclude our show?
Oh, my gosh. So many people. Under pressure.
Pressure.
Yeah, no, I like to give a shout-out to my cymbal endorsement, Pisces Cymbals. Give a shout out to them. They've been so wonderful. Andrew Freeze at Gretsch Drums. I'm trying to work out a deal with that drum company because they just make some wonderful drums. And hopefully this will convince them to let me have an endorsement since I mentioned them on the radio. Cha-ching.
Wow.
all a part of my plan. No, but they actually do make wonderful drums, and Andrew has been wonderful. You know. Gosh, all the musicians that I've worked with, guys like Manny, Rob Jekyll, John Sandoval, Lawrence White, bass player. I work with so many incredible musicians. I can't even name them all. Dennis Holt, he's a well-known Nashville session drummer. Today's his birthday, so I got to give a shout-out to him. I texted him happy birthday and all that stuff. So he did a country album. I forgot the name of the group. He did their first record, which they had a whole bunch of hits.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of the band, though. But
well, wonderful.
Yeah, so give you know, anybody I forgot, man. I'm sorry. You know, my parents, definitely my family. You know, they know who they are. So
wonderful, Chuck. Wonderful. So we're out of time, my brother and mon frère. You have a wonderful evening. We appreciate you joining us on the Jackie Coley Radio Show, and we definitely have to do this again, my friend.
Thank you.
You take care now.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir.